This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast, sponsored by Cards Accepted. I'm Elliot Jackson and we're back again with my co-host George Smith. Hello George, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Hello Elliot, Merry Christmas. You sound very jolly and lively considering you spent this week in Wales watching arguably the most dullest game of the Championship season so far. So other than that, how are you?
Have you heard the phrase, fake it until you make it? I'm trying to manifest energy because it was an incredibly dull game of football that I had to travel a very long way to attend.
That bad, was it?
Very, very bad. I would say the first 45 minutes in particular was the worst, certainly the worst game I've watched this season, maybe ever. I can't naturally think of one worse off the top of my head. It was very bad. Certainly this season, it's the worst 45 minutes of football. Probably the worst game, even as a 90 minutes I've watched this season.
And I thought I'd drawn the short straw Tuesday night, deciding to reluctantly watch the EFL Trophy semi-final between Blackpool and Peterborough because, you know, Sky decided to put that on instead of one of the four Championship games, which was rather unfortunate. Ipswich Rotherham would have been a better pick, in my opinion.
Agreed.
But yeah, it was an interesting night, but not one that will live long in the memory, shall we say.
No, but this podcast will, because we've got lots to talk about today. We've got three new managerial appointments, sort of, certainly two exits to discuss. We'll also look at the top two race after a very interesting midweek as well, and of course the bottom of the table as part of this as well, because we're going to start with Millwall, George, who have sacked Joe Edwards after 19 Championship games. He won only four of them. And having let go, well, having reached the mutual agreement with Gary Rowett that it was the right time to part ways, and things have gone a little bit stale after the excellent work he'd done over 4 years. And the club wanted to go in a new direction. They wanted to evolve the playing style. It has not worked one bit. They've only won four of their 19 Championship games since Edward came in. They've only got 1 point between them and the bottom three. And I don't think there's any other way to describe this, as they have panicked. They have cacked themselves that they might get relegated and pulled the trigger and pulled the plug on this new appointment. They went for Joe Edwards, who was Frank Lampard's assistant, an England under-20s coach, an on-the-grass mould of training coach, as we read in the media today, of which we are both part of. Well, I don't know why I say that, as if we're not contributing to that. But there's no doubt they've panicked and they've pooed themselves a little bit, because they're 1 point above the relegation zone and there is a very realistic chance they will get relegated this season. So they pulled the plug. I feel a little bit sorry for Joe Edwards, because I think when you look at the squad he inherited and look at quite an ingrained style of play, first under Neil Harris, which we'll obviously just come on to in a minute, and then Gary Rowett for 4 years, you've basically had Millwall playing the same brand of football for about 7 or 8 years, you know, not exactly, but roughly a certain brand, a certain style. And he's been tasked to come in and overhaul it. Now, ultimately, 4 wins in 19 is pretty shoddy. And I almost don't blame the Millwall hierarchy as much with this, because I do genuinely think they could have gone down and relegation would be a bit of a disaster. Because although Millwall have been a Championship stalwart for a lot of years now, I don't think there's any guarantees that if you go down from the Championship, they're not an absolute juggernaut, are they? That they would be guaranteed to come back up. And even if you are, you know, it took Ipswich and Sunderland plenty of time to turn their fortunes around. So I understand, it's very hard to sit here and say they shouldn't have pulled the trigger. But I also have an enormous amount of sympathy with Joe Edwards, because it's not a lot of time. It's a squad that was very ingrained in a certain brand of football that probably wasn't quite in line with his principles and philosophy. He only had one January transfer window to do anything in that. And this was a longer term project. The problem was that the results were so disastrous and the threat of relegation was so real that they had to pull the plug.
Yeah, I think panic is the perfect word to describe what has gone off. I messaged you, didn't I, on Wednesday morning when this news sort of came out that Joe Edwards was set for the chop, and I said, didn't I, it feels like they've panicked and they've had to do something to stave off this immediate threat of relegation, which it now is. Obviously, they were beaten by Sheffield Wednesday beneath them in the table last weekend, and that was obviously the final straw for the Millwall hierarchy. it does feel a shame, because when Joe Edwards got the job, even though most of us knew very little about him, it did feel like a forward-thinking, modern-day appointment, like you said, with a long-term view.
They drew a line in the sand.
They did. It was a new dawn, wasn't it? It was a new start, something fresh, something different to sort of modernise Millwall, take them forward, they hoped. And ultimately, it has backfired. And it's strange because they had that really good run over Christmas and New Year when they won 3 out of 5. They went 5 games without conceding a goal from open play, 4 clean sheets in that run. And then, since that win over Bristol City on New Year's Day, they've not won in the league or in the FA Cup.
It's probably quite interesting to note that when they won those 3 games in 5 as well, they went back to a back three and went a little bit more direct. So kind of went back to the Millwall of old.
They went back to the Millwall of old. They certainly did, with the big bully bruising approach that they had for so many years under Gary Rowett. And yeah, I fully understand why Millwall fans had had enough of Gary Rowett. The style of play had gone stale, though for the most part, he'd done a very, very good job over his time there. And they obviously felt it was time to approach something new, something a little bit more forward-thinking, different approach. And ultimately, it has failed. It is a really disastrous appointment it's turned out to be, because similarly, in a similar case really to Sheffield Wednesday with Danny Rill, they took a bit of a gamble going for a coach that had never been a first-team manager before. Whereas for Wednesday so far, it's working out quite well. Millwall, ultimately, it didn't work out that way. But obviously, Millwall, when you look at their recent form, they've taken 1 point from the last 21 available. It's 1 draw in 7 games, 4 defeats on the bounce. You can see 6 goals in the last 2 games without getting on the score sheet themselves. And when you've obviously got QPR and Sheffield Wednesday creeping up in that rearview mirror now, they've obviously, like you said, they've panicked and they felt we've got to change something. And that's exactly what they've done. I think for Joe Edwards, for his career moving forward, it'll be a learning curve for him. It really will. It might even prove to be a beneficial learning curve in the long term. But like you said, Millwall have reacted in the sense that if we'd kept him in charge, even though there's no guarantees that Neil Harris, who has got the job we're going to come on to, is going to be the saviour to keep them up. It's quite possible, but it's also not possible. But Millwall have obviously felt we've got to do something now to ensure we are not in League One next season. So I can understand the reason behind it. It does feel a little bit of a shame, really, for Joe Edwards, because it felt like it was going to be a long-term appointment. But obviously, the last 4 or 5 weeks have been really, really difficult, and it's cost him his job. So whether we'll see him back in the EFL at any point in the future, time will tell. He's still a young coach. He's still well in, you know, pretty high regard he's held of by a lot of people. But ultimately, on this occasion, it's just not worked out. But Neil Harris, of course, the man through the door, back at the Den for a second stint.
Yeah, back after standing down in 2019. I can't believe it's 5 years since he left.
I know, I thought that. When I saw it, I thought it can't be 5 years.
4 years, so hasn't he? So.
Remarkable. Gone quick. Gone very quick.
What I find amazing about this is he has managed in League Two with Gillingham this season. He then left Gillingham, went to Cambridge, so he's managed in League One, and he's going to manage in the Championship all in the same season. I don't know if that's ever happened before. Where you've had a manager that's been in each of the EFL league. Ultimately, look, he's coming in. He knows the club incredibly well. He's a club legend. He's the all-time top goal scorer. Steady pair of hands. I'm sure we'll see Millwall revert more to type, as they did the same style of play that got them. Let's not forget, they should have finished in the playoffs last season. They were 3-1 up on the final day against Blackburn Rovers and bottled it. And if they hadn't done that, they'd have finished in the playoffs ahead of Sunderland. So this is not a bad group of players. You know, when you look at it, no one's really gone. If anything, they've added a little bit with Obafemi coming in, with Joe Bryan coming in from last season. So there's no reason, in fairness, this squad should be a bottom three squad. It is better than that. Were they punching above their weight to be right in the playoff mix under Rowett? Probably. But somewhere in the middle is probably a more accurate representation of where this Millwall squad should be. Top half, pushing for the top 10 is kind of where I think they should be. So no doubt they were underperforming under Joe Edwards, but I think there is mitigating circumstances, as is the case. With the way the bottom three is, George, with obviously Sheffield Wednesday winning at Millwall, really impressive result. Anthony Masaba catching the eye in that one, and QPR winning at Bristol City. That is the most champion, by the way. Could you get a more championship set of results than Bristol City beating Southampton 3-1 on Tuesday or Wednesday night, and then losing at home to QPR? That is the most championship thing that's ever happened. But I think
why we love it so much.
I know. I do think that they had to probably do something. They couldn't let it meander anymore because they were walking into relegation. And with the way Wednesday and QPR picking up points, Stoke, Millwall, Huddersfield still feel very vulnerable along with Swansea. My gut feeling is Blackburn will get out of it and be okay. The same for Birmingham City, if I'm being honest. And I kind of see it as being Wednesday, QPR, Huddersfield, Stoke, Millwall, Swansea that are kind of the contenders. I feel like Rovers will get enough points. I think Birmingham will pull clear as well. And that's where I sort of see the relegation picture at the moment.
It's really difficult, isn't it, to make a firm judgment? Because, what, 3-4 weeks ago, we were also, well, we were both sat here saying it's more than likely going to be two of Wednesday, QPR, Huddersfield. And then all of a sudden, the likes of Stoke, Millwall, Swansea, Plymouth, Blackburn, Birmingham have all been sucked into it. Some obviously not as threatened as others, but they're certainly not out of the woods yet, shall we say. I think when you look at it, QPR have got Rotherham at home this coming weekend. That's certainly a winnable game that QPR are targeting 3 points from. Sheffield Wednesday at home Well, yeah, they had to work hard for it, and I'm sure we'll touch on that in a little while. But Sheffield Wednesday at home to Bristol City. It's not going to be an easy game for Wednesday, but Bristol City are a bit of a strange team, as you've just mentioned there. Obviously, beaten Southampton and lost to QPR at the weekend. And Bristol City are yet to beat a team in the bottom half of the table under Liam Manning, which is quite a strange statistic. So Wednesday will be looking at that and thinking, if we can get 3 points from this, Millwall, on the other hand, go to Southampton. Obviously, a difficult one. Will we get a bit of a new manager bounce? We will see. Obviously, Southampton beaten by Hull in the week, pushed by Huddersfield all the way in their home game prior to that. But on the balance of it, you'd expect Southampton to win that one, you would have thought. So if that does happen and Wednesday win and QPR win, all of a sudden QPR jump out of the bottom three, Wednesday are a point behind Millwall, and then the week after, Wednesday go to Rotherham, and then they face Plymouth a few days later. So there's a lot of movement in these next sort of 2 weeks that could happen. It's a really big period in the relegation battle. So at the moment, I think we can all agree that Rotherham are probably gone now. They are facing a massive uphill struggle to get out of this. So we're looking at probably two teams out of probably about six, I reckon, now, whereas it was two from three not so long ago. So it's going to be really difficult. And like I said, I think it's really hard to make a firm judgment at the minute. I always stood by that QPR would get out of it because of that individual quality, and it was that man in Leah's chair that got the winner at Bristol City.
I said Wednesday would get out of it when we did our mid-season, so we might both be right.
We may be. Fingers crossed, obviously, being Wednesdayites, we'll be hoping that Wednesday can get out of it, but it's going to be really hard to call, and I do think it will go right down to the wire. Wednesday, looking forward, they've got the next three games, Bristol City, Rotherham, Plymouth, and then back-to-back Leeds and Ipswich. So the next three, really, really crucial for Danny Rowles' side. And then QPR, obviously, Rotherham at home this weekend, they've got to be looking at that and thinking, we need to win this one. We can get out of the bottom three with a win, provided Millwall drop points. So a lot of twists and turns to come. I felt as though Wednesday were dead and buried after that 4-0 defeat at Huddersfield. But two wins in the last three, couple of clean sheets as well, has propelled them back into a really strong chance of getting out of it. And we're going to talk about the battle at the top, which is incredibly gripping for second spot. This relegation battle is going to be just as tasty, because I do genuinely think both battles could go right down to the very wire at the end of the season.
Well, let's talk about another one of those teams that's embroiled in this relegation battle. That's Huddersfield Town. They have appointed Andre Brighton-Reiter this week as their boss. A bit of a left field appointment, it's fair to say. Someone with plenty of managerial experience in Germany, known for a high-pressing style. Certainly one that I think we're kind of expecting Michael Duff to get that job, potentially, was certainly in the frame. It will be interesting to see how he does coming in after the good work of John Worthington. And we're going to hear the thoughts now of friend of the pod, Brady Frost, from Andy Takes That Chance, to get his views on the latest appointment.
Hello, it's Brady from the Huddersfield Town Fan podcast, Andy Takes That Chance. Thanks, Elliot and George, for having me on. Just to tell you about our new manager, Andre Brighton-Reiter, whose press conference was announced this week. It's a really interesting appointment. It's very left field, I think, to any other fans in the Championship. But we were quite surprised as well with his name not in the list of people. You know, it came as a little bit of a surprise until I think the day before, when we heard rumblings that it could happen. But yeah, in terms of the pros and cons, really, I think there's an argument to make that if you look at his achievements, this is probably the best appointment Huddersfield Town have made on paper. He's won the league with FC Zurich. He took a team that finished near the relegation zone the season before and managed to win the division against heavy hitters Basel and Young Boys. Funny enough, David Wagner was the manager of Young Boys, a Huddersfield Town legend. Who's at Norwich, maybe not so much a legend at Norwich, but yeah, real achievement. A team that was kind of unfancied and, you know, end up winning the whole thing, which, you know, is very encouraging. And yeah, I think, yeah, certainly an appealing one. I think what's also really good is he's excited the fan base. You know, there was the links to maybe more experienced championship managers like Michael Duff. But that wasn't one that was particularly setting Town fans' world alight, even though I think that would have been a perfectly maybe sensible appointment. But I think, you know, an interesting name, you know, from a different country, plays a different style of football. I think it's one that we can get more excited by. I think it's, you know, there's been a lot of comparisons to David Wagner, a lot of parallels drawn there. But I would argue, you know, Andre Brighton, right, he's a lot more experienced coming to Huddersfield than David Wagner was. So, and the other positive is he's not only done it in Germany, been successful in some areas, he's also done it in another country too. So I think there's a lot of positives to take for that. I think some of the concerns, I suppose, if you like, is obviously every appointment is a risk at this stage, particularly where Huddersfield are in the table. It's in quite a precarious position, you know, and the relegation zone is, you know, QPR are kind of picking up points and that gap is getting tighter and tighter. However, Huddersfield have, you know, this is their third manager of the season and it's the second season in a row that they've appointed three managers in one season. So very much a beggars can't be choosers case. But this, you know, again, this appointment, I think, is quite exciting. Looking at his career, he seemed, and from what we've heard from kind of German football journalists we've spoken to on our podcast, seems to start very well, which obviously bodes quite well for Huddersfield for this season, but doesn't tend to stay at clubs for too long. I think it's about a maximum of 2 years he's been at most clubs. So, seems to start well and fizzle out and not really work out. However, you know, what is a long-term job in the Championship these days? Anyway. And I suppose the other main question really is will he adapt to English football? That's not to be, you know, English football is the best and, you know, you've got to come over here and prove yourself. But it's a really short time frame, obviously. We're approaching the business end of the season. I mentioned about where Huddersfield are on the table and how we need results now, even though we've seen good performances under John Worthington, the caretaker. But yeah, will he adapt quick enough, because we can really not get relegated with the club's plans and ideas. Will he sit the squad? I think that's a really difficult one to ask. He, in the press conference, Mark Cartwright, who is our sporting director, he said how Andre Brighton, right, came to the first meeting armed with detailed documents about the squad's strengths, weaknesses, where things were going wrong, where improvements could be made, and actually three or four different formations he thinks the side could play to get the best out of them, including team sheets. So I think that kind of tells you how detailed a character he is. And that was something we heard from fans who we spoke to from his various clubs. Very detail orientated, loves his video analysis, which has, you know, worked well for Huddersfield in the past with like the likes of Carlos Corberan. He also mentioned about kind of the plans to take the club to the Premier League. Now, that was mentioned by our owner, Kevin Nagle. Neil Warnock kind of dropped that as a bomb when he was leaving the club. But he's, I think what impressed me was he kind of said, look, I want to be in the Premier League as quick as possible, but it's very silly to talk about that now. Our priority is to stay in the league. And I think that's, you know, kind of a sensible approach, and that's what Town fans want to hear. So, yeah, I mean, he seems to like attacking players and quite, you know, fast attacking play. We do have a bit more pace in the team now, so it will be really interesting to see. And obviously his first game in charge at the weekend against Watford. You know, Watford, 11th in the table, you know, maybe don't have much to play for, so potentially a good game. But I think you know, we've seen under John Worthington, I think he's done a fantastic job as caretaker, and you couldn't ask for much more. Unfortunately, we just need results now. So it'll be really interesting to see how he gets on. But I'm very quietly optimistic, I suppose, you know, because I do think this is arguably a bit of a coup for us. So we'll see how it pans out. But yeah, thanks for having me on, and yeah, take care.
So big thanks to Brady, obviously, for his insight on the appointment, George. I think undoubtedly it's a risk. Of course it is. Any appointment is a risk. We've seen some of those risks pay off in Marty Cifuentes, Danny Rill, and we've seen some of them very much not that so in, well, most recently, Joe Edwards, as we've discussed. But I think John Worthington coming in has shown that this group can be more ambitious and attacking and adventurous than they were under Darren Moore. I think I was probably guilty of suggesting Huddersfield's squad was really poor and they couldn't really do any better than what they were under Moore. Well, that's clearly been proven wrong. I think we've seen Sorba Thomas in particular, Josh Caroma, they have really stepped up their game during this caretaker spell. Obviously, they were beaten very late on 2-1 by Hull at the weekend, but the performances have been much improved since Worthington took caretaker reign, and Darren Moore's tenure kind of aging worse, in my opinion, for me. Like, probably from my own views, I think I was probably a little bit too quick to write off and probably to give Darren Moore maybe a bit too much credit from what I've seen in the last few weeks from Huddersfield, to be honest. It certainly feels like Brighton Wright is going to come in with an attacking philosophy, something that the owner, Kevin Nagel, has been very clear that he wants, someone that's going to come and play aggressive, front foot, entertaining football. I kind of felt like the squad wasn't geared to that, but maybe when you think Radoni, Bergzorg, Caroma, Thomas, if they're on form, obviously, we'll see what Radulovic can offer as well. They've got a good base at the back with Pearson, with Helic, who'll get you some goals. See how this appointment progresses.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree. When you reeled off some of the names there within that squad, you do break it down man for man. There are some good, solid Championship players in that team. I mean, Mikael Helic, for example, has been, obviously, he's made all the headlines this season for his goal-scoring exploits from the back, but he's also a really, really good centre-half that's proven himself at this level now. Obviously, Jonathan Hogg, he knows this division like the back of his hand in midfield. Jack Radoni, I feel, has got better in the time he's been at Huddersfield. He's developed quite well. You've mentioned Sorba Thomas. He's really stepped up in recent weeks. Likewise, Josh Caroma. So there is a good base there to work with. As for the appointment itself, it was completely out of the blue. Complete left field name. I mean, like so many managerial appointments these days, when I saw it, I had to turn to a trustworthy friend called Google to find out about him, because I'd never, ever heard of him at all. But obviously, Kevin Nagel's made that decision. I thought it was a bit surprising because, like we said, it felt like they were going to lean towards maybe Championship experience, maybe someone of the mould of Michael Duff, John Eustace perhaps, before he was snapped up by Blackburn. So it's going to be interesting to see. Like you said quite rightly, every managerial appointment is a gamble, regardless of who you appoint. It doesn't matter if you appoint Pep Guardiola or a complete unknown. Everything's a gamble. It's the same with any transfer, isn't it? There's no guarantee.
Guardiola's going to go to Huddersfield, realistically.
I doubt it, but you know what I mean. Turn of phrase. But I think transfer-wise, it's the same, isn't it? There's no guarantee that a player's move is going to work out. And we'll see how this one develops. It is genuinely impossible to make a call and say it's a really, really poor appointment, because it might turn out to be a great appointment. You think back when Huddersfield appointed David Wagner all those years ago. He was an unknown. That didn't work out too badly, did it? And then, of course, they appointed Jan Sievert. That was an absolute disaster. So it's just going to work one way or another. You just don't know, and you've got to give him time. And it will be really interesting to see how this unfolds, to be fair. But Huddersfield, like you said, under John Worthington in the last few weeks, they've shown a lot of promise. They obviously beat Sheffield Wednesday comfortably. They pushed Southampton every step of the way. They beat Sunderland and then were narrowly edged out by Hull. But you look at Huddersfield's next crop of games, and they've got a real mixed bag of sort of teams towards the top and then teams in and around them. If you look at their next five or six games, first game coming up this weekend, Watford away, it's a winnable one. It's not the most easiest, but it's certainly not one where you look at and think, oh my God, that's just forget that one. We're not going to get anything. Then beyond that, they've got Leeds at home, West Yorkshire Derby, then a trip to Cardiff, then West Brom at home, and then Rotherham away. That's before the international break. So the next five games is sort of teams in and around them, and then those at the very top, and then those on the periphery of the in the playoff race sort of thing. So I think it's going to be a tough one. It's not the easiest of runs, but we've seen in recent weeks, haven't we, the way in which they went to Southampton and got on the front foot in the first half. they're not afraid to give teams a good go. So it's going to be interesting to see how Huddersfield go about the business in the next few weeks. But compared to where they were at the end of the Darren Moore era, considering it's the same set of players, the transformation's been quite remarkable. So we'll see how things go, but they're not out of the woods yet, not by any stretch, but I'm certainly a lot more confident about them staying up than I was, say, 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I feel like a lot more positive on Huddersfield than I have. It's probably the most positive I felt about them all season. In truth, I like the squad a little bit more. They've shown a different side, and I think maybe I'd underestimated them a little bit and some of the individual players from the performances we've seen in the last few weeks. And maybe that was because the shackles were on a little bit more under Darren Moore. But yeah, I think John Worthington's done a great job. But it's so impossible to predict. That doesn't mean I think they'll definitely stay up, because we don't know how Brighton Wright is going to come in and do, how long it'll take to implement his philosophy. As you say, it's a real conundrum. But interesting that he's been appointed. I've liked Alex Matos has been a good addition, who came in from Chelsea on loan in January. He's added some physicality to their midfield as alongside Radoni and the stalwart that is Jonathan Hogg. So let's see how Huddersfield get along. Another managerial change this week, George. Michael Beale has been dismissed after 2 months in charge at Sunderland. Kind of feels like he was on a bit of a hide into nothing with this one, because the fans didn't want him in before he'd even took the job. I think there was a bit of trepidation with Tony Mowbray getting sacked. A lot of fans, I don't think anyone wanted him to leave, but I think there was, I think the fans would have accepted Mowbray going if it had been a really exciting appointment, if it had been something that could really get people off their feet. And when you start talking to Will Still, football manager fame, then I think that got expectations very high. And I think if Will Still had come in, I think fans would have been very happy. I don't think there was a big issue with Mowbray with a lot of the fans, but I think if they felt it was a natural upgrade, a definite upgrade, they'd have been okay with it. I don't think it's fair to say they felt like that about Michael Beale. I do feel like 2 months, which is what he's had in charge at the Stadium of Light, is not enough time to enact serious change. But it's very hard, again, to argue there was any signs that that relationship between the supporters and Michael Beale was going to improve. And Beale wasn't the sort of manager that was going to pander to them either. I think we've seen, if you look at David Wagner, for example, the way he's spoken until recently about Norwich fans, he's kind of just accepted the criticism and took it on the chin. And it isn't until very recently, in fact, the midweek win last week over Watford, where a section of the supporters were booing, bearing in mind Norwich are probably one of the form teams in the Championship at the moment, when it went to 2-2. And he did say that those supporters probably should stay at home if that's how they were going to act. So I do think that he's not really done that. You know, there was a little bit of a pop that he had a couple of weeks ago about, you know, saying that fans didn't like him because of his Cockney accent. And I do think 2 months isn't a lot of time, but that relationship just wasn't getting any better. I do think he was dealt a bit of a tough hand by the fact he was replacing Mowbray, who was liked. But on the pitch, they did seem to go backwards a little bit. And after the managerial change, they lacked the same fluency in attack, particularly with Clark, Bellingham. Roberts has been injured, but Abdullabar, Mason Burstow, they've not quite had the same freedom and fluency that they had under Tony Mowbray. Tony Mowbray was such a good manager of working with young players as well, that I do think this was just a recipe for disaster, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with that sentiment, to be fair. It just didn't ever feel like the right fit, did it, from day one? I think, let's be honest, Michael Beale has been a manager that's had ups and downs, shall we say, in the last two, three years. When he first went into QPR, he started off really, really well. QPR fans were very, very fond of him. He got that team playing some brilliant football. Then obviously interest came from Wolverhampton Wanderers not long into the season. And he decided to stay after holding talk with them. He openly said he couldn't be the first to jump ship. And
probably the worst decision he's made in his career, because that was the line in the sand where it's all gone Pete Thompson.
It has gone a little bit pear-shaped for him since then, because obviously he went to Rangers and obviously it didn't work out brilliantly there. But obviously Rangers, it's a completely different kettle of fish, isn't it? Scottish football, you're more than likely, regardless of who you are, going to get in the top two every season with Rangers Celtic. It's just that constant battle and loop, isn't it? But back in England again. Sunderland came calling to replace Tony Mowbray, who personally I think was sacked very, very unfairly. And worth mentioning as well with Tony Mowbray, we wish him well at this moment in time. Obviously, having a break from Birmingham City, we wish him well and all the best with his recovery and what's going on at the moment. Hopefully, he can be on the mend as soon as possible. But back to Mick Beale and Sunderland, it just felt like a broken relationship from day one. And I think the final straw for a lot of people with the events that happened at St Andrews last weekend with Trey Hume not getting the handshake that he sort of reached out for after being substituted.
Do you think he did that on purpose? Well, it's very bad optics.
It's hard to say, isn't it?
I tend to think he might have missed him.
I think it's certainly possible. It is possible if you are certainly sort of, maybe you're, for instance, if you're standing close proximity to him when he's walked past you and you are just sort of that focused on the game and your vision is set, it is possible. I mean, we weren't there, we didn't see it, only Michael Beale will know.
I find it very hard to believe he would have just ignored him. That's suicide. That would have been career suicide to do that.
And I don't think it's the way that any manager would sort of go out of their way to behave like that.
That's what I mean.
You've sort of got to be really something to do that. And I'll be honest, I think the way that sections of the media have gone after Michael Beale in the last few days is uncalled for, to be fair. I think there's been a lot of harsh criticism of him and the way a lot of people have targeted him and sort of poked fun of him for the way this has gone. Yeah, it's not worked out at Sunderland. But at the end of the day, whether you like him or not, the man has lost his job. He's out of work now. He'll get back on the horse, I'm sure. I'm sure he will get back in work eventually in some capacity, whether there's a little break beforehand, we will see. But I just think the way a lot of people have treated him is quite unfair, to be honest. And yeah, I can't blame Sunderland fans for wanting him gone, because it felt like a recipe for disaster from day one. There was never a spark between the fans and the manager at all. And it was quite obvious it was just never going to work. So it'll be really interesting to see how Sunderland's season progresses from here. Obviously, Mike Dodd's in charge now for the rest of the season. Quite surprised by that when I saw that within the statement, because
I completely agree.
We've still got a fair bit of football to be played. And I'll be honest, initially, I didn't see that Mike Dodds had sort of been placed in charge quite a few hours after the news had broke. I just presumed that they were going to be looking for a replacement. I didn't see it until later on Monday evening that he was staying in charge. So you look at Sunderland's current position, 7 points off the playoffs. There is a little bit of a gap starting to open up after Hull City's victory on Tuesday night at Southampton. But 7 points, it's not an impossible gap to bridge, certainly in the race for now. So it does make you wonder. But Mike Dodds, to be fair, he didn't do too bad a job in his stint in charge between Mowbray leaving and Michael Beale coming in. But I just feel that Sunderland may be missing a trick because, like I said, there's still a fair bit of football still to be played. There's what, 15, 16 games to go, give or take, something like that. But I think for Sunderland now, this next appointment is so, so crucial. Because they've obviously gone between managers like no tomorrow. They've had so many since dropping out of the Premier League in 2017, I want to say it was. I think it was 2017. It's been one manager after another. Mowbray's felt like the best fit. Alex Neil was obviously onto something before he got poached by Stoke City. But now it feels like they really do need to sort of implement a long-term plan with a manager that the fans can get behind, can warm to. And there is going to be that bond again, because Mowbray had got that last season for Sunderland fans. Was an absolute joy to watch. It was great. So going to be very interesting to see where they go in the summer. Is the playoff push over? You can't say it's over yet, but I think it's looking doubtful at the moment. I think there are better teams, obviously in better form, better spirit around the place. But with Michael Beale moving out of the Stadium of Light, things may pick up again and we'll see how things go. But feels like the right decision, but I just think the way that Michael Beale's been targeted by some people in the last few days is really uncalled for and unjustified. But people have got their wish, by and large, in the Northeast. They wanted him gone. He's gone. And I don't think it'll be a period that many Sunderland fans reflect on in much fondness in years to come.
I agree with you. I find the appointment of Mike Dodds very bizarre, considering there's still 13 championship games for most teams left. And they're 10th, 7 points off the playoffs, which, you know, before Hull's win at Southampton, you know, they were 3 points off the playoffs. So even less, and it felt quite unlikely that Hull would obviously go and win at St. Mary's. So
they're not out of it in terms of the top six. It kind of just, I feel more and more clubs are too quick to appoint caretakers until the end of the season because they, it's just like, you're just writing off the season. I don't really understand it. Yeah, there's also obviously, I'm sure you've seen the online inquest about a Twitter account potentially linked to Mick Beale, which was posting Mick Beale propaganda. That's peak championship. Mick Beale's camp have, of course, denied, although there is undoubtedly a link between him and that account. They've denied that he was in possession of it in terms of posting tweets and things like that. Stranger things have happened. That did at least give people a bit of a chuckle and a bit of something to do in midweek when they should have been working. I want to have a slightly wider discussion about changes in the managerial market this season, because if you look at the amount of teams that have changed manager in the championship, been pretty similar to what we're used to, and certainly what we were used to last season. How many can you honestly say have been a definite success? Two, in my opinion, off the top of my head. Danny Rill and Marty Cifuentes at Wednesday in QPR. Look, just a few names. Darren Moore came in for Neil Warnock, sacked, didn't work, wasn't a good appointment. Wayne Rooney, terrible appointment, comes in for John Eustace. Mick Beale comes in for Tony Mowbray, terrible appointment. Joe Edwards, they've all aged very badly, and the amount of teams that have sacked a manager when they might not have needed to necessarily make a change. You know, Warnock didn't have to leave Huddersfield when he did. They didn't need to get rid of Eustace at Birmingham. Mowbray didn't need to leave at Sunderland. I suppose Rowett didn't really need to go, although it was mutual consent. These are not sackings like, for example, where Wednesday sacked Cisco Munoz, they had to make a change. Gareth Ainsworth had to leave QPR. Some of the middling clubs have made appointments and changes that they didn't really definitely have to make, and none of them have aged well. Even someone like Luke Williams has not come in and set the world alight since replacing Michael Duff at Swansea. I'm not saying there's quite a lot of managerial changes that the jury's out on. You know, John Eustace coming in at Blackburn, we'll have to see. He's only had three games. But the only two I think you can categorically say have been a success in the championship this season are Danny Rill and Marty Cifuentes.
Well, while you've been speaking about that, I've just been analysing the league table, and in the bottom half of the championship, as it looks today, there's only Middlesbrough and Cardiff that have got the same manager that they started the season with.
Could chuck Schumacher in there as well? He's not gone and set the world alight at Stoke.
Michael Carrick and Errol Bullitt are the only two managers in the bottom half of the table that started the season with their respective clubs. Birmingham, Blackburn, Plymouth, Swansea, Stoke, Huddersfield, Millwall, QPR, Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham have all changed managers at some point. And I think you can add Liam Richardson to the list at Rotherham. Yes, it's a very difficult job at Rotherham with the players available.
But
he's not made any sort of impact since he's been there. He's not done anything to get them any closer to getting out of this battle. So I think when you look at it, you're quite right. Danny Rill, though a lot of people say outside of the Sheffield Wednesday community may say, well, he's not even got them out of the relegation zone since he got there.
Wednesday have picked the ninth most points up in the championship since he was appointed.
Where he picked them up from, the state that team was in under a disastrous first 10 games under Cisco Munoz, is unbelievable. The style of play has been transformed. The fans absolutely idolise Danny Rill. There's no doubt about that. He's probably one of the most popular gaffers in the championship now.
I think similar at QPR with Cifuentes. He's come in and done a really, really good job and done it quickly.
He was another one, like Danny Rill, to be fair, who I had to turn to Google to look at and find out about. And Marty Cifuentes, I'll be honest, quite similarly to Danny Rill as well. I think, sort of, not just as a football aspect, but as a human being, he comes across as a really nice, genuine guy. He talks very well with the media, very, very likeable. And I think if him and Danny Rill both complete these survival missions that they're trying to achieve, I think if both managers get a decent amount of backing in the summer, preparing for another season in the championship, they could be looking up rather than over their shoulders next year. So I agree with that. They've both been good success points, even though their jobs and their ambitions are not yet achieved. So really interesting to see. But the amount of changes we've seen in the dugouts this season has been phenomenal, hasn't it? And realistically, I think when you come to selecting a manager of the season at the end of the year, I think there could be a few candidates at both ends of the table, say if Wednesday and QPR are kept up from the positions they came from. Personally, at the minute, if I had a gun to my head and said, you need to name a Championship manager of the season now, I think regardless if they go up or not, I think Kieran McKenna wins the award for me, without a doubt, for the way that Ipswich have kept up with Danny Rilke, Leicester and Southampton. He's certainly a viable contender.
They got one in 13. They were rock bottom. Well, they got 3 points.
Something like that. It was a long way back that they had to come from. When you consider when they drew with Leicester on the 29th of November, which felt like a significant turning point, they were 12 points from safety. The closest they've been to getting out of it was 3 points on New Year's Day. Then they had a bit of a difficult January. They've picked up again recently. The gap, as we speak, is back to 4. So it's certainly possible. But for me, Kieran McKenna...
I would go with McKenna, though. I agree with you.
We're going to talk about this automatic promotion race, but the fact that he's kept a team that was in League One for 4 years, in touching distance with Leeds, Southampton, with the financial differences from last year, it is unbelievable what he has achieved, whether Ipswich go up or not.
That's a lovely segue. Let's move on. So Ipswich, 95th minute winner. They were 3-1 up against Rotherham United. They went 1-0 down within 2 minutes, Tom Eaves. But they quickly turned that around with a couple of goals from Wes Burns. 3-1 up, you're thinking, well, surely that's 3 points for the Tractor Boys against Rockbot and Rotherham United. Nope. Tom Eaves again. And then the most audacious of Panenka penalties in the 94th minute from Cafu. Very much going by his namesake with that Brazilian flair.
He lived up to the billing there, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I don't think Liam Richardson was that impressed by it, judging his post-match press conference, considering his comment on it, was it? It's a good job it went in, isn't it? But yeah, we saw the good, bad and the ugly probably with Rotherham in the way that they did battle back impressively and Ipswich again defensively. Lapses of concentration, certainly the weakest area of their squad. But they score goals and they've got resilience in bucket loads. And to win it in the 95th minute must feel like, you know, it feels like two wins almost. It's a real shot in the arm, especially when they'll have come in and looked at the results and seen Southampton were beaten 2-1 by Hull City. What a midweek for Leeds United, basically. So this automatic promotion race, particularly for second, but as we'll come on to, even for the title, it's not a foregone conclusion if Leeds were to beat Leicester on Friday night. But yeah, let's go start with Ipswich. Big win for them to get over the line in dramatic circumstances. Well, and probably at this stage of the season, if you're going to do it in that way, now is the time because it can give you a real boost in momentum and confidence.
Enormous, absolutely enormous, because Ipswich, after that little period of stagnation that they had around Christmas and the start of this year, when they went on that sequence of draws, they've now won 3 in a row, 4 wins in 7. They're starting to get into a rhythm again. Obviously, they crushed Millwall last midweek, they beat Swansea at the weekend, and then obviously had this dramatic victory over Rotherham on Tuesday night. And had this game finished all square, people would have looked at that and thought, that is a massive waste opportunity against the bottom of the league at home, who are absolutely terrible on the road. Thank goodness for Amari Hutchinson. And Ipswich, as questionable and susceptible as their defensive record is for a team in their position, they're able to sustain it. This is the crazy thing. They continue to outscore teams, particularly at home, and get the job done. 25 points now from winning positions they've accumulated. I think 18 of them have been won at home as well, which just goes to show, even if you go 1-0 up against Ipswich, you're still in danger. And I think that is a key trait of this Ipswich team. They never, ever know when they're beaten. And that is a thing that has stood them in good stead throughout the campaign. I think for Kieran McKenna, though, I think he's got such a good crop of attacking talent available to him now. The January transfer window was even though they were forced into it because of George Hurst's injury, Kiefer Moore coming in has given them an extra lift for me. I think he felt like, even though he'd obviously been at Ipswich before and it's easy to say it, it felt like a very Ipswich-type signing, if you get my drift, because he's a player that just has gone in there, fitted in perfectly, he knows where the net is, got really good attacking players around him, both centrally and out wide. Wes Burns with a couple of goals in midweek as well. Connor Chaplin, I think he's up to 10 for the season now. Broadhead's up to 11. He's got 3 in his last 4 games. There's a lot of quality with that Ipswich team. And of course, Amari Hutchinson as well, with two last-minute goals in the last 2 home
Hutchinson's
games.
Come off the bench, I thought he's looked really lively. I'm surprised he's not played more minutes, if I'm honest.
He did. He obviously got the equaliser against West Brom, didn't he, a couple of weeks ago. He looked quite lively in the Millwall game. I watched that one on TV. And obviously, he popped up with the winner against Rotherham. So, obviously, as a result of that win, Ipswich heading into this coming weekend, and obviously there may be people listening to this beyond the weekend with our new recording schedule now, but Ipswich heading into this weekend coming, which obviously starts on the 23rd of February, Ipswich on equal points with Leeds United, 69 apiece, equal games played. This is not going to be a foregone conclusion for this second spot on the presumption Leicester still do win the title. Obviously, Leicester slipping up at the weekend, losing to Borough. But I look at Ipswich's next run of games and I see it as a really good opportunity. If they're at full throttle, at full pelt, they can get some points on the board. Their next five prior to the international break, Birmingham at home, Plymouth away, Bristol City at home, Cardiff away, Sheffield Wednesday at home. They are all winnable fixtures for Ipswich if they're at their best. So I think Leeds obviously are on a remarkable run. And I'll be honest now, and I'll go on record saying this, I will be shocked if Leeds don't beat Leicester on Friday night. And I am so looking forward to that game. I think it's been an absolute corker. They've obviously already beaten Leicester this season as well, winning at the King Power. That was a Friday night as well, of course.
Stylistically, it's quite a good fit for Leeds with the way they play in transition with Somerville, with Nonto, with Jorginho Rute. I do think it's a good stylistic match for them with Elland Road under the lights too.
It's got the makings of being a cracking game. And I sort of fancy Leeds
as well. If Leeds were to win, and suddenly Leicester's starting to get reeled in a little bit.
Yeah, they do. And this is the thing. If Leeds win this game, all of a sudden, they're one win away from moving into a winning run of double digits. Be 9 wins on the trot if they beat Leicester City. And of course, the Championship record is 10 wins in a row with Aston Villa a few seasons ago. So they've got that to go for as well. Mm. But you can't rule Ipswich out. Southampton, they've had a little bit of a blip. 2 defeats in 3 for them now. You can't rule them out, though, because if you'd have said back in, September, that you're going to lose 2 of your next 25, 26 league games, whatever it is, you'd have snapped your hand off for that. So you can't be overcritical of that. They've had a little bit of a bump in the road, a bit of a setback, but they're still in this. And at the end of the day, two points separate the three of them. It's a gripping race that I think will go down to the wire. And of course, we mentioned that final day shootout again between Leeds and Southampton if it comes down to it. But you cannot rule out this Ipswich team. You just cannot do it.
Yeah, completely agree. I think it's worth touching on Hull City's performance because the results have been better in the last few weeks. You know, they beat Rotherham. They weren't great. Obviously, they scored a 1-in-a-million goal with Jadon Philogene, came from behind, beat Huddersfield, weren't great, could have drawn it, scored in the 95th minute to get the 3 points. Far, far more dominant, far better performance against Southampton. The best, probably maybe the best performance they put in all season with Zaruri, Carvalho, Philogene causing problems. And I feel like probably since Christmas, Hull have probably flattered to deceive a little bit. The results have not been terrible, but I don't think the performances have lived up to expectations. They have thrown in a few shockers like the Swansea game at home. You know, they lost at Sheffield Wednesday on New Year's Day. There's been a few where they have been outplayed, certainly. And even in some of the games they have won, they've not been the dominant side. They could have easily dropped points against Rotherham and Huddersfield, as I say. But this was a real statement victory, a real line in the sand. And despite a bit of a wobble in terms of performance levels, the points have still been consistent enough that now they've got a bit of a buffer in sixth place. I had a look at the table this morning and I'd not really realised how much of a buffer Hull had managed to build up by winning the games they have. Not particularly from Coventry, they're still in touching distance. I think it's 3 points. But the likes of Sunderland, for example, and the team sort of in 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, they're now 7, 8, 9 points adrift rather than 3 or 4, which it was before. So really big win for Hull City. Great performance. Southampton, obviously, beaten by Bristol City. That winning run was going to come to an end at some point. I think we'd seen a warning signs a little bit in the performance against Huddersfield, albeit they got out of jail and won 5-3, that they were starting to creak a little bit. The goals were starting to go in at the other end more regularly than they had been. So I felt after the Huddersfield game, a defeat was probably on the cards. But to then go and play really well, in fairness, at West Brom, really good performance, used the squad well, but then really get outplayed, it felt like, by Hull. You know, this was not the usual Southampton. You know, if I expect how Southampton might lose a game, it's more like Bristol City, where they do have a lot of the ball, but they got hurt. They don't take the chances. They're missing that bit of quality in the final third. They get hit on transition, and that's what happened in the Bristol City game. This was Hull at their best and quite comfortable against Southampton.
It was. I was reading some of the comments from Hull City fans on social media during the game on Tuesday night, say at half time, and a lot of the fans were sort of in awe of how good they'd been in that first half. Obviously, went into the break 2-0 up. They said they'd been absolutely first class, best performance of the season by a long way. And it just goes to show how bonkers the Championship is, to be quite honest. Because you mentioned earlier on about Bristol City doing a peak Championship thing and losing to QPR, but having beaten Southampton a few days before. Hull City have now won at Southampton and Leicester this season, but lost at QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, which just sort of tells you how bonkers this league is and how unpredictable it is. But I think for Hull, the big thing for me is the fact that they've just started to find a little bit of consistency. Because it's almost strange the way their sequence of results have gone. It all depends on the way that you look at it. After they lost to Swansea on the 10th of February, at that point, they'd lost 3 in 5. Now you flip it round after these 3 wins in a row, they've won 5 of the last 6. That Swansea defeat felt like a bit of a jolt for Hull, in the sense that they seem to win one, lose one, win a couple, lose one. This is the first time they've won 3 games in a row at this level for over 2 years. So this is a big step forward for Liam Rossini. And I think of those teams sort of chasing that sixth place, Hull are probably under the biggest amount of pressure because of the money that they've spent.
They spent the most,
the players that they've brought in. And realistically, the quality that they've got, and this isn't sort of a saying, well, they've got the money, they should do it. They've got a really, really talented team now. Anna Sorori, Jaden Philogene, Fabio Cavallio, those three players wouldn't look out of place in a Southampton team, a Leicester team. Let's be honest. Hull's recruitment this season as a whole, both in the summer and in January, has been very impressive. And it's easy to forget that they've also still got Liam Delap on loan, who obviously is out injured at the minute. Mm-hmm. So Liam Rossini, maybe with respect, you should sort of be saying, yeah, he should be getting this team in the top six. But you raised a good point there about having that little bit of a buffer now in that sixth spot. It seems to have traded places a lot with Coventry and Hull in the last few weeks, but literally by goal difference or by a point. 3 points, though it's only 3 points, feels quite significant because the gap has been much, much closer. And it seems crazy saying that when it's now only 3. But moving forward for Hull City, West Bromwich Albion at home this weekend, that should be a really, really good game. That is a game that obviously could see Hull, I think, move above West Brom. In fact, they're only a point behind them now.
It surprised me, actually, again, looking at the table, how close Hull were to West Brom. Because West Brom have been in great form recently as well. Obviously beating Plymouth in the week.
Yeah, we got a win themselves, didn't they, Tuesday night? A commanding win at Plymouth,
Tom Fellows is playing so well at the minute.
Yeah, Plymouth really struggling at the minute. There's been a lot of criticism from their fans there towards Ian Foster, the manager. I think they registered an XG of 0.10. on Tuesday night, Plymouth, which is a major concern. But going back to the top six picture, Hull West Brom this coming weekend, that's got the ingredients to be a really good game. And then beyond that, for Hull City, they've got a trip. If my internet won't die, I'll be able to tell you. There we go. They've got Preston away, then they've got Birmingham at home, and then Leicester at home. So 3 of the next 4 at home for Liam Rossini. And with the exception of the Leicester game, Preston and Birmingham, they're both games they're going to look at and think, get 3 points from these. So Hull in a good position. They've found a little bit of momentum now. Playing some good stuff, it seems. Certainly in the game against Southampton the other night. And then obviously you've got the chasing pack, Coventry, Norwich. Norwich on a really good run at the minute. They're a team that are sort of in a position that you did not expect them to be sort of 3 or 4 weeks ago. They've really put some good form together. Preston, they play Coventry on Friday night. Preston win that. They go above Coventry, which is unbelievable considering the way Ryan Lowe was being hounded not so long ago. So this playoff race is getting really interesting. Sunderland in 10th at the minute, 7 points behind Hull. You can't dismiss them yet, but it is a case of maybe in a couple of weeks' time, if results don't go their way, you might start to see a reduction in the number of teams in this race. Well, this is really difficult because I like Norwich in the way that they've stepped up, because I think the way that they've played in the last few weeks and the bucket loads of goals they've plundered has been really impressive. Josh Sargent,
can I give you a stat that may shock you a little bit?
Go on then.
Josh Sargent scored 10 goals in 13 games.
Yeah, I know. He's
only played 13 games. It's remarkable, isn't it? That apparently having your best striker fit makes a big difference to whether you win football games. Who knew?
Who knew indeed? But I think it's worth quickly mentioning then, as you've just mentioned the man there, Josh Sargent, it's worth me just mentioning this statistic that I happened to work out the other day that I actually put on the podcast's Twitter page, or X page as it's now known. Norwich City's record with Josh Sargent this season: played 13, won 8, drawn 3, lost 2, 27 points they've picked up. Without him, 7 wins from 20 games, drawn 3, lost 10, 24 points.
I would argue.
So it's fair to say that when he plays, they get the job done. And you've also got the likes of Borja Sainz, who have really stepped up in recent weeks. He looks a quality acquisition. Gabriel Sara with a wonderful free kick against Cardiff at the weekend, and it felt an age since he last scored.
The Cardiff
game, obviously, he's got 2 in 3 now.
It was quite poignant because it's almost going full circle, because it felt like the Cardiff away game was what saved David Wagner's job.
It is. They've taken 34 points in the last 54 available since losing to Blackburn Rovers on Bonfire Night, which is a week before that Cardiff comeback, which almost, like you say, probably saved David Wagner's job. So going back to your...
They were terrible in that game against
Blackburn. They were. I remember watching it. They were absolutely abysmal. Blackburn tore them to shreds. But going back to your original point about where Norwich fit into this little race that's starting to hot up, I think it's a case of you cannot dismiss them. I don't think you can rule Preston and Sunderland out yet. You probably can't even rule Watford out to a degree, but I think it's very unlikely they will get anywhere. I don't think they deserve to be in the position of a playoff place compared to the others. So I still think West Brom will get into one of the fifth or sixth spots, even though they seem to have been reeled in quite quickly to say they've not really had a bad patch, which is quite bizarre.
Playing really well.
Exactly. Other than the defeat to Southampton, they've been on a pretty good run of late. So we've currently got a situation where, hypothetically speaking, and it would be a really good result for it to happen, say Preston beat Coventry on Friday night, we would be in a position where we would have 4 points separating 5 teams between fifth and ninth. So it's a really big one. So West Brom Hull on Saturday, in fact, is a really, really big game for both teams with the chasing pack so close to them. So on the presumption West Brom still get in there, either fifth or sixth.
I think West Brom will get in there.
To be firmly concrete, I would select one of Hull, Coventry or Norwich to get in there. Who I pick, I don't know at the moment, because Hull look really good. Norwich are going from strength to strength. Coventry's longevity has been pretty good. Their form over the last 3 or 4 months has been solid. And they did it last year, like you say. So, being honest, I don't know who to pick at the moment. I think it's really, really key. And bearing in mind, we're approaching the end of February. Easter's quite early this year. It's the final weekend of March. Your favourite weekend of the EFL season. We know that you love it.
I'm going to be away for a week beforehand as well. So I'm going to come back charged and refreshed.
I'm off that week as well. I've even taken it off. What a bumper week it's going to be. But I think personally that could decide a lot. So going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. But I think it's hard to, and I'm kind of changing tact here, because say just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I was a little bit doubtful of Hull because they were struggling to consistently put results together.
I don't think the performances have been consistently brilliant,
have
they? One good performance at Southampton doesn't mean they'll continue.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. But when you've got 3 wins in a row, it just injects a little bit of confidence, doesn't it? And I'll be honest, I've seen quite a bit of Hull recently, and I've not been that impressed by them on each occasion. Unfortunately, the Southampton game wasn't televised, so I couldn't watch it, but they were brilliant that night by all accounts. But I saw them against Sheffield Wednesday, saw them against Norwich, saw them against Sunderland, and they lost 2 of those 3 games. And they weren't great. Even in the victory at Sunderland, they weren't brilliant, but it was an established, solid away performance just to get the job done, which when you're going for the playoffs, you've got to do. But in the last few weeks, that continuity of results gives them a lift. You look at their remaining fixtures, they've still got to face Leeds, they've still got to face Leicester, they've still got to play Ipswich. They've got some difficult games still to come, but when you've beaten Southampton away from home, you've beaten Leicester away from home already, you're going to fancy your chances of beating anybody. So let's see how it plays out, but you can't overlook Norwich, certainly can't overlook Coventry. And like I say, if Preston win at Coventry Friday night, who knows, they could be in the mix, but I do see them tailing off. Don't think they've got the quality that the other 3 have got. But for sure, it's a really interesting battle, this one.
I agree. Coventry, Hullam, Norwich feel like the most likely teams. I feel more confident about West Brom than I did feel about them when we made our mid-season predictions. I think the takeover is a big help. I think Tom Fellows coming to the fore has been really impressive, and because obviously they'd lost Sarmiento. That was a bit of a concern.
Mikey Johnston looks quite good as well.
Mikey Johnston looks exciting. They've recruited quite well. I like Carlos Corberan a lot. They keep a lot of clean sheets at home in particular. I think they'll finish in the top six. I probably would say Coventry, Hull, Norwich is probably the order of the three I think most likely to finish sixth. At this moment in time, I went for Coventry in my mid-season predictions, so it will be interesting to see how that one plays out. But that marks the end of this week's Championship Chat podcast. Please make sure you are subscribed in your podcast app of choice, and you'll get the latest episode from us every single week. You can follow us on Twitter as well, at ChampChatPod24, for the latest Championship news, opinion, and analysis. And a huge thank you again to our sponsors, Cards Accepted, for supporting the podcast this season. If you're looking to take card payments with no contract or monthly fees, make sure you go and check them out at cardsaccepted.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Championship Chat podcast.
This is the Championship Chat podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.